You're listening to the Spark Radio Network, internet radio like you've never heard before. Innovation, creativity, and imagination are all said to begin with a spark. So fasten your seatbelt and take the ride of your life and listen for the spark.
You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Most writers and radio show hosts know that to connect with your fans, you need to do more than just write books or record the latest podcasts. There are many different elements that go into forming an online platform, but there are also many hidden traps. To make matters worse, solid advice on how to survive the muddy waters is scarce. In the book Hidden Traps, I talk about some of the important issues of working with an online platform, highlighting traps that could put your physical or internet security at risk, or be harmful to your reputation. Are your social media posts just links with a few disjointed words making you look like someone who can't complete a sentence? Did your new website cost you more than you anticipated? Are you leaking your personal contact details across the web without even knowing it? Then you need Hidden Traps. Hidden Traps is now available in paperback and ebook from a variety of retailers, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo. Visit blackwolfpublications.com for more details.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-553-8687. That's 800-553-8687. Again, 800-553-8687.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
Everyone loves liberty. Our rights come from God, not the government. So why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Liberty HealthShare is founded on the idea that most people truly want to help one another. Healthcare sharing allows members to do just that as a true community that supports one another in times of need. Liberty believes people should make decisions for themselves and their families. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Freedom from guilt or doubt about how your money is used. You have the freedom to direct your health care, not to be dictated to by bureaucrats. Stop letting others tell you what to do and join a community of like-minded people. Exercise your freedom. Join Liberty HealthShare and take back the control of your health care while helping those around you. Call Liberty at 855-58-LIBERTY. Again, that's 855-58-LIBERTY for more information, or you can check them out at libertyhealthshare.org. Again, that's libertyhealthshare.org.
Here's George Foreman with InventHealth.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
Get your free inventor's information. Call 1-800-353-6490. That's 1-800-353-6490. Again, 1-800-353-6490.
At St. Jude, a family never sees a bill at all. It's like the world has been lifted off of your shoulders.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
Sometimes riders feel lost, unsure why a passage may not be working. It takes another set of eyes to help us nurture our writing into full maturity. At Black Wolf Editorial Services, we strive to enable writers to develop and grow, offering manuscript critiques and line edits through a mentoring editorial style. We also offer assistance on generating a writer's bio for your websites. Black Wolf Editorial Services, nurturing your writing into maturity. For a full list of services, visit blackwolfeditorial.com.
Sometimes we need to slow down and remember the simple pleasures in life. Good coffee, good books, and good company. Come on in. Take a seat. The coffee's just been brewed. Let's see who we have in the coffee shop today.
Well, I'm looking around the coffee shop. Lynn Stringer, how you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you, Jesse?
I'm doing great. It's so nice to have you in the coffee shop.
Thank you for having me here.
Oh, not a problem. So what's in that hot, steamy mug of yours?
Oh, I've got a cup of tea, actually. I'm a tea girl, so I do enjoy a real good cup of tea.
I don't know a coffee shop that doesn't have at least a few decent tea selections on hand.
Yes, it's all good. I do enjoy a nice hot cup of tea, especially when I'm reading a book.
Oh, I have to confess, I enjoy tea as well. I tend to be coffee in the mornings up until mid to late afternoon, but on a cold winter evening, give me a mug of hot tea any day.
Mm. Yeah, it sounds good to me.
So, you've got a book that's out. It's called Once Confronted.
I do indeed, yes. It's my fourth book, and this is my first one that's contemporary. My other ones were science fiction, so it's been a real learning curve for me.
Wow, switching genres included, that must have been a learning curve.
It was. It was interesting with this book, actually. It was a lot harder to write than I thought it would have been. It's the subject matter proved to be a bit more challenging than I was expecting.
So can you tell me a little bit about the book?
Sure, I can. The book is the story of a girl named Madison. She's just finished school here in Australia, where I live. She lives in Brisbane, and she's having, after high school, she's having a gap year where she's going to have a break from study for a while. And her friends have been lucky enough to go to Europe, but her mum didn't want her to go that far away because she was worried about her. So she goes to Sydney to stay with her aunt, and her aunt gets her a job in a cafe bookshop. But while she's there, she's the victim of an armed robbery. And the book is about how she moves on from that and her recovery, and also having to deal with the fact that one of the attackers asks for her forgiveness. And she has to work out whether or not she can do that. So that's where the story goes, more or less.
Wow, that sounds like a very moving story.
It is. It was rather tricky to write, as I said earlier, mainly because they say write about what you know, and that was very true of me because I was a victim of armed robbery myself. So that was many years ago now, but it was amazing how I thought, because it was 25 years ago that happened to me, and I thought, oh gosh, after 25 years, won't be a problem, I'll just put it in and it'll be all good. It was actually incredibly difficult and very emotional to write, so, especially with her suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, because I based that on my own experiences with that, and that proved really difficult to write because it was quite, as the title of the book says, it was quite confronting to put someone in that situation and make them go through that.
I can imagine. And one of the funny things is, as I'm a military spouse and what they call a Gold Star widow, my first husband was killed in the line of duty in the United States military. It's okay. It's been long enough that I remember the happy times more than the pain. And then I was crazy enough to marry another soldier.
Oh dear.
So I often get approached by people that go, my grandfather was in World War II, but he never talks about it. The best advice I always give them is give him another soldier to talk to.
Because
it's easier to share your experiences. So I bet you were having almost a dialogue with your character.
Well, I was quite a bit, actually. And I, at one stage when it was being edited too, my editor said to me, you know, I don't think this is quite right. I don't think you've done enough with the post-traumatic stress stuff. And I said, no, that was what I went through. And I got very defensive because that was my experience. And I knew that it was legitimate because I'd been there myself. And it was also something that was so personal to me. Any suggestion that it needed to be done a different way was met with a lot of aggression from me because it was something that was very real. But yes, Madison, my the character, she's she went through this much better than I did. She coped a lot. I'm not saying it was an easy ride for her, but she coped a lot. Gosh, authors are weird that we talk about our characters like this. But it's not like it was an easy ride for her. But she was able to deal with it a lot better than I could. I found it much more of a struggle. And I felt that her maturity and bravery also helped her a lot with that.
Well, that's amazing. And actually, I feel that your main character is probably part of your alter ego.
Well, I'd hope so. Because like I said, she does have a lot of qualities that I admire. And I guess that was one of the things that when writing the book too, it was almost something for me to aspire to. Because where she goes in her journey, I'd like to think that that I could at least consider those challenges that she considers. That was a difficult thing too with writing it, actually, because of where she goes in her journey. I had to say to myself, would I be willing to even consider things that she does? And I honestly don't know. And it was difficult to say to myself, can I write about this when I don't even know if I could do it myself? And I thought, well, this book isn't my story so much as Madison's. And it was almost written as a challenge to myself to say, I need to step up and move on from this and to be able to maybe give it some kind of useful spin. And I hope writing the book actually has made it a useful experience.
It sounds like a fascinating read. It really does. I can see a lot of character growth in this book.
Yeah. The interesting thing too with Madison isn't alone when she goes through this. Her friend who also works in the bookstore, Evan Mansfield, he's there too. He goes on a different journey. He has no problem with the idea of harboring resentment and hatred towards the men who attacked them. And it's clear that he struggles with that. And that's an issue. And of course, Madison tries to help him. He's not always open to help. She tries to help him to deal with that. But you can see that the not dealing with the problem, not trying to move forward and move away from it and sort of let it go, actually affects Madison and Evan in incredibly negative ways.
I have a feeling that this book could actually not just be a fun read, but may actually even reach out and help someone who's struggling with overcoming their own challenges.
Well, I'd hope so. And that was another reason why I wrote it, because it was, as I said earlier, it was difficult for me to write it. But I felt, gosh, if this can even help one person, it might be worth all the pain and difficulty I'm going through just trying to put this down on paper. And I'd like to think that people can look at it and say, well, I understand why Evan makes the choices he makes, and I completely do. When you're an author, even if someone's doing something that you think this isn't the right course of action for them, you have to understand why they do that. So I completely understand why he does what he does. But by the same token, I see how it's not benefiting him in life at all, and that he would be better making different decisions in that respect. And so you have to sort of be able to put them in these places, but then go, okay, maybe that's not a wise decision, and I might hope that someone else would feel empathy for him, but realize that that decision is not one that they should make.
I think it sounds fantastic. I can't wait till I get a chance to read it.
Oh, well, that's very good. I hope you do. I hope all of your listeners do too. It's a good book. It actually, too, I'll tell you as well while I think of it, it's actually just won an award with the Literary Classics, which is a competition, or it's not a competition. It's a group over in America, and they have an award for books every year, and it's just won the Silver Award in their college fiction section. So that's been really gratifying, having written it, to see it win that.
Well, I personally think that is amazing.
Yay!
Gotta have a little fun every now and then.
You do.
So what made you decide to switch genres? Your previous books, you said, were science fiction?
That's right. I wrote a science fiction trilogy back in, that came out in 2013. And that was really fun. I do love science fiction as a genre. But when I originally started writing, the first time I wrote a full-length manuscript was back in the 90s. And it was just something I sat down to write. And I wrote three at that time. They were all contemporary ones. Ironically, Once Confronted was one of the ones I first wrote back then. And later on, I updated it and rewrote it just in the last couple of years. But I changed the genres because it just felt like it was a natural thing to do. I felt like this is a story that worked and could be told. And my publisher had actually said to me, do you have anything contemporary? Because I really feel we could do with a contemporary book in our portfolio at the moment. And I said, okay, look, I'll rewrite this one and give it to you and see what you think. And she liked it and decided to publish it. But yeah, I think science fiction is a great love of mine, but I love any story that is great in the telling and makes you feel something about the characters and want to root for them and keep following their journey and see where it heads. So I think I could write in other genres. My only real problem with contemporary is the fact that there has to be a lot of research done, and because Madison ends up studying social work, so I actually had to because I've never studied social work. So I had to contact a few social workers and social working students to see what happens, what they go through, what they look at, so I could write about it in a way that is authoritative. Actually, one scene I've got Madison, she does her placement during her college course. She does it in a domestic violence unit. And I was fortunate enough to get a social working student who also had done her placement in a domestic violence unit. So she was able to say to me, okay, this is what Madison would do. This is what she would say. This is what the people who were reviewing her would do and say, and how they would handle certain situations. So she actually rewrote that scene for me to make sure I had things correct, which I really appreciated so much. It's great to have that kind of help.
Oh, it's phenomenal to have that kind of help when you can have someone who's knowledgeable in the field. And personally, you know, it adds so much detail to the story that you couldn't get otherwise. And personally, I think research or lack of research can make or break a manuscript or a novel.
It can indeed. There's nothing annoys me more than when I see something obvious in a book that the author's got wrong. I mean, you can understand some things, and I'm not precious about certain things. I say, okay, you know, that's okay. That's not a major thing. But if it's a major part of the plot and it's clear that they haven't even bothered to check it out at all, it bugs me. For example, I've read a few historical, I kind of do like historical novels, but I've read a few that will talk about people drinking tea in England, not realizing that tea didn't even get to England until 1750. And they'll have their book in the 1600s or something and they're drinking tea. No, they wouldn't have been doing that. And a lot of people, because tea is so associated with England, they don't realize that, no, actually England didn't have tea until quite relatively recently. And that kind of thing does bug me, because that's not hard to find out if you can just do a Google search to find that out. So, but you know, the more intricate things I can understand if people haven't managed to find that out. But some of those things like that, if they seem relatively simple, that does bug me.
I actually read a published novel, traditionally published, best-selling novel, where the author had moved landmarks and things to fit what he wanted, and it drove me bananas.
It would have driven me bananas too, I think.
But then, conversely, a couple weeks ago, I read a manuscript by another best-selling author, completely different genre, and he had the details right down to a foreign dignitary's license plate.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. I don't know if I would have got that much detail in it.
Well, the author I'm referring to that did the outstanding job, because I'm not going to name the other one, happens to be my personal favorite author as far as mainstream published, you know, big name published authors, and that would be Brad Thor. And he is known for his research.
Well, that's good. Yeah. Some are. And I mean, I understand being an author myself, I know how hard it is to get those kind of details correct. And the possibility for errors is high. I mean, personally, my debut novel, the science fiction one, it actually starts set in America. And because I live in Australia, but I thought, okay, I know quite a bit about America, and I had three American friends read it because I said, I want you to pick up anything that I might have got wrong. And they still miss things, and it's very annoying now because I know there are things in it that aren't quite right. Fortunately, I've had a lot of US-based people read it, and most of them don't seem to pick up on it, and they love the story anyway. But it drives me nuts to know that I got that wrong. But I did try my best to find it out, and it's easy to miss those things. I mean, you've got to remember too with J.K. Rowling with the Harry Potter books, Harry Potter's, the station to Hogwarts is station 9.5. Is it at King's Cross rail station? I can't remember exactly which
9 1/3
but which
quarters at King's Cross.
Yes. And it's actually wrong because those stations, 9 and 10 stations, do not join at that railway station. It was another station that does join, and she got it mixed up. So she made that mistake there. But does anyone care? No, they just roll with it because the story is so entertaining. And also, it's not like it's a huge part of the plot, so to speak. So you can sort of say, okay, you know, we'll just use our imagination and go with it. So you can forgive some things.
There are things that are forgivable. But like I said, the first book, when I go back to that, and the author moved 98% of the landmarks in his book.
Yeah, that's
and I'd
not
actually
good. That's
been
not
to the city that he was referring to, and I'm going, that's over here, not over there. That's over here, not, you know, this is wrong. And I'm sitting here, and I very, very seldom will not finish a book because I am a voracious reader. I can't string more than a couple thousand words together in written form. But you give me a book to read, any book, I will read fiction, I will read nonfiction, I will read kids' books, young adult, science fiction, fantasy, high fantasy, thriller, cozies, memoirs.
Cool. Wow.
I mean, if I can get my hands on it, chances are I'm going to read it because I have such an appetite for books, which I must selfishly admit is part of why I do the show, so I can get more books.
Well, that's great. That's fine by me, because if you have authors on, we love that, because that way more people get to hear about what we're writing about. And we're so passionate about the things we write, because that's why we do it, of course. If we want people to know what we've done, and getting the word out is such an important thing. We have stories that are inside us that simply must be released. And I can tell you, there's nothing more exciting for an author than to have someone write to us or contact us and say, I love this world you've made. I love the characters you've created. I love the story you told. It really moved me. That's the most exciting thing that happens to me as an author, is the fact that they can respond that way to the same thing that I responded to in writing it.
And I think that's amazing. In fact, Brad Thor, my favorite author, has a saying, and I don't know where he got it or if he created it, but I don't think he did. No surprise in the writer, no surprise in the reader. No joy in the writer, no joy in the reader.
Very true. That is very true. I know that often, I know a lot of authors will write huge outlines for their books, but I'm one of those who sort of flies a bit more by the seat of my pants when I'm writing. I'll know sort of where I'm heading, but quite often along the way, things will take me by surprise. Like with one book I wrote, it was the third book in my trilogy. I got to a scene and I knew the characters had to get somewhere, but I didn't know how it was going to happen. And then suddenly it just came to me. Oh, wow. Of course, that's what's going to happen here. And it actually involved the death of a character too. And I had no idea up to that moment that that character was going to die. And suddenly it just went, that's just where the story is going. So it was so exciting. And that is the kind of moment that I think the reader also enjoys, where it's like, oh, I didn't expect that. It was usually because the author didn't actually expect it either.
And I think that is amazing. So you're what I call a hybrid plotter pantser. You know main point A, main point B, main point C, and main point D. But how to get from A to B and B to C and C to D, you don't have a clue.
That's quite right. Yeah, quite often I'll sit down and I say, I'm no idea where this scene is going. Let's just see what the characters are doing. And it's often interesting. I know this is the case certainly with me and with some other authors who are more character-driven authors. The characters will quite often tell you what to do in no uncertain terms. I'm writing another manuscript at the moment. I've just finished it. And I was quite – I don't mind – I like a bit of romance in my novel so that they don't always – it doesn't always get in, but I do like a bit. And I so wanted these two to get together. Do you think they would? They just refused to. They refused to even kiss, and it was very annoying. Because I was trying to sort of say, come on, I kept putting them in this situation, say, okay, this is where you get all romantic. And they kept saying, no, we're not going to do that. And it's like, oh, that's disappointing.
That sounds so funny to me because, like I said, I'm not a writer. Mm. Never have been. I've tried. It's not for lack of trying. Do you know what NaNoWriMo is?
I do indeed know a NaNo. I've participated in NaNoWriMo before, yeah.
Well, I've had, because I've spoken with so many writers and authors over both my time in doing this show and my other activities, because I am such a voracious reader, I've had people say, oh, you need to try it, you need to try it. I have repeatedly tried and repeatedly failed. And I finally figured out why. It wasn't until last year, my sixth or seventh attempt, that I finally understood why. I just don't love the writing process.
You really have to love it.
Reading a book than writing one.
Yeah. Writing is actually quite hard. And even for an author who loves it, there are times when you're sitting down at the keyboard going, I really don't want to do this. But you just push through that because, you know, once you get through this scene that's a bit more tricky, you'll get back into something that you feel the drive to do it. But there are days here when you just sort of go, oh gosh, I really just don't want to do this. But yeah, you have to be able to get through that. And if you don't love it, believe me, in this business, it's not something you make money out of. So you have to do it because you actually adore doing it and you love getting word out about your book. And as I said, creating interesting worlds and characters that people can enjoy as much as you do.
I think that sounds fascinating and amazing and also good advice for other authors and writers that may be listening.
Mm. Yeah, it definitely is. There's always there are always going to be times when you just get to it and say, I just don't want to continue. And you can't use that as a reason to quit. You have to push through that and say, I'm also a professional editor, and I'll quite often say to my clients, if you get to a position where you don't know where to go with your story and you've completely lost it and you have no idea what to do, just write rubbish. Write whatever comes into your head, sit there and write it. And quite often that process will get you somewhere where you go, okay, I can see the way through now. I know where I'm going. And then you could go back and fix up the bit that was terrible later, and you can join those pieces together more successfully, and that can sort of get you through that difficult period.
That does sound like very sound and sage advice from someone who has had to go through those, I just don't want to do this, or, you know, this just, but for me, I've found when I'm on, nothing excites me more than sitting down at my desk and pulling up to the microphone. I love doing it. It makes me smile. And that's why I actually started a second show, because I wanted a little more time behind this microphone.
I think you've got the right job, Jesse.
Like I said, can't string more than a few thousand words together if you sat me down and tried to make me do it, or at least not words would be worth having. Because I'll find myself starting out trying to write a story about pirates and end up writing a story about pirates with space aliens killing everybody off in like chapter 3.
Well, that sounds really exciting, actually. I'd like to read that book.
But then I can never get past, okay, I killed everybody off. I'm done.
Well, maybe it should be a novella then, and that killing everybody off is the end. It doesn't have to be too long, you know. It can be very short. Lots of different lengths of the stories.
I think this one was about 8,000 words.
Short story. That fits into that category. So, but yes, but yeah, I know what you mean. Sometimes you do kind of get frustrated because you think this is going somewhere and then it doesn't. I remember back when I first started trying to write novels in the 80s, that's a long time ago now. This is when I was just a teenager, and I was going, I'd start writing, and same as you, I'd usually get about three chapters in and then just go, oh, I've lost interest in it now. I don't care. I don't know what to do with it. And I'd stop. But for some reason or other, in the 90s, it suddenly kicked in that I could push through that and write something that was full length, that was 50, 60,000 words. And I was able to do that at that point. Maybe it's just because I had got the right ideas at that stage. Maybe it was because I had a bit more maturity or even experience in writing to understand how to do that successfully.
Well, I definitely think it does take experience to learn how to do something successfully, because just like most writers' first drafts are kind of rough around the edges, to say the least, my first quote-unquote radio show was rough around the edges too, and I will freely admit that. In fact, I'm kind of glad there's not too many copies of that episode out there lurking.
That's the interesting thing, because it is the same with writing. Experience is the most important thing when it comes to writing. Now, when I look back on my debut novel, which I still love as a story, I can barely read it these days because I look through it and go, oh, gosh, what did I do that for? Why did I put it that? I shouldn't have used that word. That's a repetitious word, or something like that, because I've grown since then, even in just the past few years, and I can now see it in a different way because my experience level has risen as well. But I still am proud of that book, though, because it's a story that says – a lot, and it has a wonderful world that I created because it's science fiction, and I really enjoy it for that reason. And I have to sort of say, no, this is part of my journey as an author, and it's still something that people are still enjoying. Yes, I would have done it differently now if I had the time again, although not completely differently. I'd just changed the wording of a few things here and there. The plot wouldn't change, but I have to recognize that that's a part of my development, because experience is the best thing. If anyone out there who's listening to this is an author or wants to be an author and they feel like they're not going to make it, what you've got to do is you've got to write, and you've got to read too, because reading will help you understand how to write, and it will help you understand what works. I would also be advising people to check out some writers groups or perhaps some courses about writing online or in your local area, because anything that helps you understand more about what you're doing can make it easier for it to flow.
Well, I must say, Lynn, I wholeheartedly agree with that, because as time progressed, you know, my first episode faded to a memory, thankfully. I think it had all of four listens and took me like 3 hours to prepare for it. At the time, I didn't even think about it.
Mm.
Whereas, and that was only a 30-minute episode, whereas now I can pull off my show prep for my one-hour live episode four nights a week.
Wow.
Anywhere from 2 hours to just over an hour, and sometimes I can even push it under an hour if I really have to.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Well, telling tales out of school here, what I do when I'm trying to push, you know, I'm trying to push the time envelope, because say I got held up, a meeting ran late, because I do have a day job as well, a meeting ran late, I got home late, there was something else of urgency that took my attention away during one of my two show prep hours, what I'll do is I'll find myself reverting to a topic that I know fairly well. And I'll make that a bigger segment in the story. My my other show, it's called Jesse's POV, which stands for point of view, for those of you who aren't familiar with the literary term. And I cover international news, but if I'm having a rough day, I know North Korea well enough to go for an hour if I have to with that topic. I know the Middle East and what's going on with ISIS or Daesh or ISIL. It's all the same thing, guys. It just has three different acronyms.
Mm.
And I know enough to make that a nice large segment with an audio clip or two.
Mm. And some days you just need that too. You need something to fall back on that you know really well, because you need those days to sort of say, I'm just going to do something where I know everything's going to flow and it's not going to be a drama.
Exactly. There's those days, 99% of the time, I pull up behind the microphone and I am like, let's get that red light on. Let's see it. Let's get this done. But then there are days where it's like, okay, I got a show to do. I'm supposed to be on the air in 40 minutes. And that's the thing about radio. My deadline won't wait for anything or anybody.
Yeah, that is an advantage with writing over what you're doing, in the fact that, you know, excuse me, I can just say, okay, I'm going to put it off for a week and I'll just come back to it later, and I can do that, whereas you can't do it as easily, so because you've got to go at a certain time.
Exactly, although I will say once in a moon or two I will drop what we either call a replay, a bonus play, or a best of show. Once in a while,
okay. Mm-hmm.
I will pull something like that out, but I really try very hard not to lean on that crutch.
Mm-hmm. But there are some days too where you just need to do that. So, and that's okay.
But that's also why I love coffee shop, because it doesn't take the intense prep work. I do some prep work. A lot of it's just the pure and simple act of scheduling and juggling and editing the interviews when they're complete. But I also I will with everybody, when they gives me their social media information, I will go take a peek and wander around a website and do things like that. Mm-hmm. So that I have an idea of who this person is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's always very good.
So with your character development, how do you... I'm kind of asking more of a writer craft question for... If you've got a character that you want them to grow and change during a story, how do you bring that about? Because to me, it just seems almost like it's Greek to me, friends.
You know, it's interesting. I'm not sure I can really explain that, especially with the characters as they come to me. Often they seem to come taking on a life of their own. And sure, I'll get an idea, like with Madison, my protagonist in Once Confronted. She, I knew that she went through this thing. I knew that I would have her go through the response to it, the PTSD, and I knew I'd have her coming out the other side of that and making progress. What else she would be came to me as I was writing, and that was something that was a journey of exploration with her. She more or less did as she was told as a character. Sometimes, as I sort of reiterated earlier, I talked about the two I was trying to get to fall in love, sometimes the characters take over and they say, I'm not going to be that at all, and I don't care what you think. With my trilogy, I had a character in particular that I put together. I brought him in because I knew my hero was going to get a conscience, and I needed someone around who I could rely on to beat up or kill people if I needed that done as part of the story, because my hero was going to start saying, I don't think that's right, I can't do that anymore, because he was sort of like, you might even call him, he was a Jason Bourne kind of character, in the fact that he was, I guess you could call him a spy, and sometimes he had to do that for one of his missions, but he was going to realize that it wasn't always a good idea. So I had to have another character who was able to do that if I required it. And so I invented this character, and he was, in the course of the story, had to pose as a school teacher. And I knew a couple of scary school teachers in my time in school, and so I thought it'd be really nice if I made him kind of a scary teacher. And so, but as I did that, I remember I put my fingers on the keyboard to write him, and it was like he took over, and he decided how much he was going to be in the story, and he decided he was going to be more prominent, and I had, you know, I couldn't. It was like he was saying, "Well, you created with me, you created me. Now you've got to deal with me." And he's actually quite a frightening character. And it was my reaction was like, "Yes, sir, please don't hurt me." But I had to try and manage him. But yeah, he just sort of came and inhabited my mind. And he wasn't someone I sat down and, like some authors do, they'll actually chronicle the whole thing on paper and say, okay, this character's going to be an introvert and this character's going to have a bad temper and they've got this bad habit or this nervous tick. I don't work like that. The characters themselves will often tell me what they do, and I don't know where it comes from and I don't know exactly how it happens, but quite often my imagination will just start to form them, or they will just start to form themselves in my imagination and I'm just along for the ride.
Well, Lynn, while I do think this is fascinating, it is time to pay those radio station bills. Yes, there are folks, there are even bills in radio. So, Lynn, I'm going to pour you some more hot water and slide you another tea bag. And I will see you on the other side of this commercial break.
Most writers and radio show hosts know that to connect with your fans, you need to do more than just write books or record the latest podcasts. There are many different elements that go into forming an online platform, but there are also many hidden traps. To make matters worse, solid advice on how to survive the muddy waters is scarce. In the book Hidden Traps, I talk about some of the important issues of working with an online platform, highlighting traps that could put your physical or internet security at risk, or be harmful to your reputation. Are your social media posts just links with a few disjointed words making you look like someone who can't complete a sentence? Did your new website cost you more than you anticipated? Are you leaking your personal contact details across the web without even knowing it? Then you need Hidden Traps. Hidden Traps is now available in paperback and ebook from a variety of retailers, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo. Visit blackwolfpublications.com for more details.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-553-8687. That's 800-553-8687. Again, 800-553-8687.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
Everyone loves liberty. Our rights come from God, not the government. So why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Liberty HealthShare is founded on the idea that most people truly want to help one another. Healthcare sharing allows members to do just that as a true community that supports one another in times of need. Liberty believes people should make decisions for themselves and their families. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Freedom from guilt or doubt about how your money is used. You have the freedom to direct your health care, not to be dictated to by bureaucrats. Stop letting others tell you what to do and join a community of like-minded people. Exercise your freedom. Join Liberty HealthShare and take back the control of your health care while helping those around you. Call Liberty at 855-58-LIBERTY. Again, that's 855-58-LIBERTY for more information, or you can check them out at libertyhealthshare.org. Again, that's libertyhealthshare.org.
Sometimes writers feel lost, unsure why a passage may not be working. It takes another set of eyes to help us nurture our writing into full maturity. At Black Wolf Editorial Services, we strive to enable writers to develop and grow, offering manuscript critiques and line edits through a mentoring editorial style. We also offer assistance on generating a writer's bio
for your websites. Black Wolf Editorial Services, nurturing your writing into maturity. For a full list of services, visit blackwolfeditorial.com.
For hanging in there with us while we paid those radio station bills. Yes, there are bills everywhere, even in internet radio, my friends. Lynn, and thank you for hanging in there with me.
No problem.
So we'd been discussing character development and writing. What was the mental gymnastics, for lack of a term, you went through from writing science fiction to writing this coming of age story or maturing story?
That you
recently released. I mean,
mm-hmm. The thing is, I mean, even with something like science fiction, there's plenty of character development in there too, that is, or at least in my books, on quite a normal level. I mean, that book also begins with a teenager, and it actually, the science fiction novel, my debut novel, The Air, it also starts with a high schooler. She's just in her last year of high school, and she's fairly normal and not dissimilar to Madison, although, of course, the direction the story goes in is vastly different in terms of where she ends up. But even science fiction still has, essentially, if it's good, it's based on characters. It's based on the story of that intimate relationships they have with each other. Sure, it might be in a bizarre setting. It might even be between non-human characters or between a human and a non-human character. But essentially, those kinds of things in stories that we relate to as human beings are the same. Those are the kind of things that engage us. Those are the kind of things that draw us in, whether they're in a contemporary story or a science fiction or something completely different.
Now, you mentioned previously you're an editor. What kind of editing do you do? Is it copy editing, developmental editing? What kind?
All of the above. I started off actually as an editor of a newspaper about 20 years ago, and gradually after that got into non-fiction editing first and then fiction editing. I will do all sorts of editing on just about anything. I work for a self-publishing company now. I have also worked for a traditional publisher as an editor too, and in those roles I was editing everything from thesis work, which can be incredibly dull. And I've done theses on air conditioning units. I've done ones on different systems that you use to get better search results in your internet searches. I've done fiction from just about all genres. It's really a mixed bag, and I do all the different kinds, the copy edits, I do the structural edits. It doesn't really matter. I have a real understanding in my head of what flows well and what works well. And, of course, I know all the techniques as well. So that's something that makes me able to do, I think, a pretty good job.
Wow. I think that's amazing that you're so well-rounded.
Yeah. I mean, it's the thing with writing is a lot of the time, like I said, with the characters crossing over between genres and the way you write them, a lot of the techniques are the same regardless of what you're doing. Admittedly, with nonfiction, there is a significant difference in style, but still you're looking for a flow of ideas that communicates well. It's all about communication, and that's the most important thing, learning how to communicate whatever idea you're telling, whether it's a story of someone in outer space, or whether it's a story of how you think it would be best to build our computers. So it's all just a question of how you're communicating things and how effective you're being in that communication.
When you're doing your editing, I assume you have to take into consideration the intended audience, because obviously a paper that's written for other computer-oriented people would be written in much more technical terms than one designed for, say, end users.
Absolutely. And that is where sometimes I do have a difficulty in my job. Like when I was doing the thesis about the air conditioning units, there were some terms he was using, and I'm just going, right, I know that's spelled correctly. I have no idea what it means because I don't know that kind of stuff. But he was paying me at that stage to make sure it was working well in terms of the flow of the sentences. So I could do that. But, yeah, I couldn't tell him whether or not his science in air conditioning units was correct, because I wouldn't have the faintest idea about air conditioning units. But that was not my job at that stage. So, yeah, you do have to be aware that there's a difference in language. I actually had this with someone I was talking to. I'm a member of a lot of different author groups on Facebook. And we had an author in one of the groups the other day saying, I've just had someone told me that it's really terrible to use contractions, you know, words like don't and can't and things like that in my novel. He said that was very bad and I should not be using them at all. I'm going, that is ridiculous. That is the way we speak. And that has actually come from when you're writing an academic paper. You don't use contractions generally. You use the words all individually. That's the way you're supposed to write in academic papers. But when you're writing a novel, it's conversational. It's engaging a person on a different level. So you try and write how people normally speak, unless, of course, you've got a science fiction novel where they don't speak in contractions, or if it's a historical novel back from a time when they didn't use them either. Those kinds of things have to be taken into consideration. But generally speaking, you have to know certain differences between styles and things, but you know, overall it is about the communication of the issues. Certainly with thesis writing, there is a very, very particular standard, and they can actually vary between the different theses you get from different people too. So you always have to be wary, okay, have they done this because it's what's required by the university they attend, or is this a mistake? And there's always that element to it too.
Well, I think it is fantastic, like I said, that you're so well-rounded. What, given you're so well-rounded, what advice would you give to someone who is just beginning their adventures in writing?
For a start, I'd say you have chosen something extremely exciting to do. And I would then say, don't do this unless you love it. Because a lot of people will do this because they think their book's going to sell 100,000 copies. As much as I'd like to tell everyone that's going to be the case, I'd certainly love it if it was the case for me, it's unlikely, especially at the start. And the likelihood is you're going to spend quite a few years just trying to struggle along and get people to hear your books, hear about your books. So do it because you love it, because you can't stop yourself, because you absolutely must do it. That's the best way to proceed. And then, of course, if you're completely new at this thing, go out and find one of those courses I talked about earlier. Try and find someone, because there are techniques in writing. Don't just sit down and assume you can write. Even me, with my experience prior to writing a novel, I'd already had a great deal of experience in writing, but I wasn't aware until I became more aware of fiction and started to train as a fiction editor. I wasn't aware of all the different techniques that they're used specifically for fiction and how important they are to modern writing. And I see a lot of authors, because I do a lot of editing, a lot of authors will come to me and it's clear they don't know those things either. And it's hard for me then, because I have to sort of go back to them and say, look, I'm afraid the way you've written it, it's going to be difficult for your audience to engage in the way you've done it. So it's better for new people who are starting out to take that passion, go do a course or something. It will help them get that groundwork basics, maybe join a writer's group as well. That will be incredibly helpful with different feedback from other authors to work out what the rights and wrongs are and how they're going. And then what absolutely every author must do, with no exception, is editing, both self-editing. You need to go through your manuscript and make sure it makes sense, make sure the spelling's okay, make sure you've communicated everything okay. And then you must get a professional edit. Even if you're going to try for a traditional publisher, make sure your script is as polished as it can be before you send it off. You must have a professional editor, because you are too close to your story to see it objectively. Get a professional to tell you how it's working. I know there have been people, and NaNoWriMo is some place I know this has happened, because I've seen this on NaNoWriMo, where you've got people who say, I've just finished my manuscript. I'm going to upload it to Smashwords. They haven't even read through it yet. They don't know if there are spelling mistakes even, much less whether or not their plot makes sense or they haven't communicated things successfully. Don't do that. That is the worst thing you can do, because then it will ruin your reputation as an author. You want to make sure you get it as right as possible the first time. There will always be someone who doesn't like your work anyway, because writing is a subjective thing. We all like different things. But you want to make sure you get it as good as possible the first time before you put it out in the public eye.
I think that is outstanding advice. Now, what you mentioned your publisher, so are you traditionally published?
I am. I have a small press publisher here in Australia. She's been really great. I actually was working for her for a while as an editor as well, and helping her with a lot of different things, and did submissions to it that I would sometimes look at submissions that she got in and decide whether or not we were going to publish those books, which taught me a lot about too, that I am using in editing, because I can say to people this works and this doesn't. But yeah, she's a small press traditional publisher. She's really interested in getting books that mean something. She does children's picture books all the way up to young adults, and through my once confronted is through Riser Press, which is her more young adult arm of writing, and she will do also biographies there and other things like that as well. She's interested in producing books that say things. A lot of her picture books have themes such as nut allergies, asthma. She also do things like she's done books, published books on dealing with depression for children, you know, and also things like a child coping with a grandparent who's got Alzheimer's and things like that. So she likes producing things that have a lot of meaning to them and help communicate something to the reader. And so I really love her passion for that, and the way she tries to always produce something that's going to be both useful and hopeful as well as entertaining.
I think that sounds like a fantastic goal.
Mm.
So, you mentioned you have another book in the works.
Yes, I do. I usually have an idea floating around in my head, but yes, I finished it just the first draft just this week. And this is actually somewhere where I can give a bit more learning to for anyone out there who is interested in writing. I know even before I've gone back and read it over, and you should always leave it for at least a couple of weeks before you go back and start editing, so your mind's clear. You'll see it more objectively then. But I know there are things in it that I need to change. I introduced a few characters that I don't need, so I'm going to amalgamate those characters into one person, because that will work better. And the fewer major characters you have running around, the easier it is for people to follow. I also changed a few other characters in a little way, so I've got to go and make sure that they're consistent. Also, and this was interesting, I had a town that was majorly featured in the book, and I didn't actually name it until about the last 10 pages. So now I've got to go back and put the name in much earlier as well, and just update things like that. Because you do quite often, especially if you write like me and sort of a lot of the things are new to you as you're going, you need to make sure that you've done it consistently and that you haven't changed things in the middle that will reflect a different kind of development by the end of it. You need to make sure it's consistent. You need to make sure the plot's consistent, the characters are consistent, and that the story flows well.
Well, I think that's also fantastic advice.
Thank you.
Now, as I do at the end of every coffee shop interview, I would like to give you a chance to give out your social media information and where people can find out more about you and your books. And if you have a website for your editing, please feel free to give that information out as well.
Sure. I do have a website. It covers both my author work, my writing, and my editing. It's lynnstringer.com. Just remember that Lynn is spelled L-Y-N-N-E, and Stringer is string with an E-R on the end. So it's just lynnstringer.com. If you go there, you can see my books. You can see what I'm up to. You can see how much I've charged for editing, if that's what you're interested. You can also contact me. There's a contact page there, and I'm more than happy to chat with anybody if you've got just some questions about writing or anything like that you'd like to talk to me about. I'm also on Facebook. I have both an author page and an editing page on Facebook. So if you're on Facebook, you can look there. I also am on Twitter. My handle is at The Air. That's, of course, The Air spelled H-E-I-R, at The Air Novel. I'm on Pinterest. I'm on Goodreads. Please, I'm on Amazon too. I've got an Amazon author page. So wherever you hang out, I'm probably there. So come and have a look.
Well, I'd like to thank you for joining me in the coffee shop. And I think it is time to pour myself another cup of coffee and settle down with a good book.